looks like a clinic on how not to do things on the baseball field.
Now, the show that Red Sox Nation turns to first. This is Boston's most listened to nightly baseball show, The Baseball Reporters with Tony Maz. Brought to you by Big Y Grocery Store, T-Mobile, Needham Bank, Ron Mishar's Auto Stores, Jordan's Furniture, Integrity from Marvin Windows and Doors, TestTrips.com, Acura of Auburn, Anderson McQuay, Direct Federal Credit Union, Gravely Lawnmowers, AceTicket.com, WFXD-TV, and Mohegan Sun. On Boston's home for sports, 98.5, The Sports Hub.
Ground ball to first, knocked down by Moreland. They'll go back to the bag to get the out. Now down to second, requiring a tag. That's a double play. And the Red Sox win the ball game, despite the rain, by a final score of 5-3.
So before we get to the particulars, very simple question for you tonight. We'll start with you, Jim Murray. Is the American League East race over?
Feels that way. It does.
Expound.
Well, I mean, the Yankees have been reeling here, and they continue to lose to some of the dregs of the league, like the Tampa Bay Rays. And the Red Sox, to their credit, you know, they've been cleaning up against this terrible competition. And now that they're six games up on them, and the Yankees still need a lot of help, and Gary Sanchez, even though it looked like he was basically like half-assing last night, but now he's been placed on the disabled list with a groin thing. Like, yeah, for all intents and purposes, it feels like the Red Sox have wrapped the division up to me. With six games out of them, it might get a little close. I know they have a series with them coming up here in you know, a week. But to me, it feels like the AL East is over, and it's the Red Sox.
I mean, the Red Sox only have 60 games left now. Okay, 71-31. They've played 102 games. They have exactly 60 games to go. The Yankees have played less. They keep getting rained out. So the gap in the loss column is only four. But facts are facts. Today in the American League East, the gap between Boston and New York is six games. And how about this one, Murray? You want to talk about scary scenarios if you're a Yankees fan? And I heard this today on the midday show, so I can't tell you that it's necessarily my my thought. Shaughnessy said this on the midday show. Apparently, it was in the New York Times today. The Yankees are only 6.5 up on the second wild card spot. The point being, the Yankees are almost equidistant now between first place in the division and missing the playoffs. The Yankees' lead over Oakland for that second wildcard spot is 6.5 games.
Right, and this is why I've talked up the A's with you over the last few weeks. And you know, who the hell's really been paying attention unless you're like a hardcore seam head. But I found them interesting, and I thought it's good for the league that they actually added and made the move for Familia, because if they, you know, this is a mid-market team at best. Didn't feel like they were going to make any moves, but they've been playing, you know, second-best baseball behind the Red Sox for the last couple of months here. Whoever was going to end up in second place in the American League East was going to have to worry about Oakland for the remainder of the season. And it feels like it's going to be the Yankees. And like you just said, it's only 6.5 up on them in the wild card race. Like they got problems right now.
I mean, really, when you think about that, right? The simple way to say it is the Yankees are as close to being the Oakland A's as they are to the Red Sox. That's really the way to say it. 617-779-0985 is your number here on the Baseball Reporters. And a dramatic difference in developments in Baltimore and Tampa Bay last night. So we're going to get to the particulars here. But last night, the Red Sox, obviously, held on to beat the Orioles. It was a little shaky, but nonetheless, they won. Meanwhile, in New York, or rather in Tampa, the Yankees had a chance to beat the Rays in the ninth inning. They had the bases loaded with nobody out. They didn't score. And the end of the Yankee game went like this.
Sanchez hits one to short. Second baseman flips to the shortstop, Adames. He's safe to throw the first. It's in time. And the ball game is over. Sanchez hit a rocket that the second baseman Robertson fielded. Flipped to Adames for the force. That was not in time. But a heads up Adames threw on the first base and got the out. And the Rays hang on and win by a score of 7-6.
A disappointing loss for the New York Yankees. Plenty of opportunities. And you're right, Kenny. Gary Sanchez hits this ball hard. Robertson goes to Adames at second. He's not going to be able to make the play, but his head's up enough to continue the play to first base as Sanchez getting down the line. Obviously, he doesn't run well, and they get him by plenty.
Let's take a look at Sanchez who hit that ground ball.
He wasn't busting out of the box. Tries to pick it up at the end. That's just inexcusable right there. Yeah. That cannot happen.
I mean, really, unbelievable what happened at the end of that Yankee game last night. And so I'll tell you what, as a Red Sox fan, if you want to gloat today, here's what you should be gloating about. The Red Sox are a combined 19-5 against Baltimore and Tampa Bay. 19-5. The Yankees, 10-10. And that difference, and we've said this before, that difference could decide the division. So, as a Red Sox fan, you should feel good about that. Your team continues to take care of business. Meanwhile, the Yankees have a catcher in Gary Sanchez who won't chase a pass ball up the third baseline. If you haven't seen video of this yet, you should look it up on the internet. Sanchez dogged it after a pass ball, allowing a runner to score from second base in the first inning. So he cost him a run there. And then in the ninth, did not run out a grounder, in which the Rays tried for a force out at second base, and they didn't get it because Aaron Hicks hustled. He beat the throw, and they still had time to throw to first and get Sanchez by two steps. Now, today, the Yankees placed Sanchez on the disabled list. He had just come off relatively recently after a groin injury put him on the DL. They put him back on the DL today with a groin injury. But if you're buying that story, the Yankees have a bridge to sell you in Brooklyn. Okay, because that's a load of crap. Here's what Aaron Boone said about the whole thing after the game last night.
I'd have to watch it back. But yeah, he's got to find that his gait quickly, and he should be able to do that now. So, but I, without having seen, I was watching the play, and I haven't watched the replay yet.
Is that something you will look for? And if you don't like what you see, you have a conversation with him?
Sure. Yeah, I mean, we always address stuff with our players, but I want him running at that smooth clip I've talked to you guys about, you know, so, and part of that is getting out of the box.
Sanchez also didn't run hard on that pass ball initially. Is it an issue? Is he hurt, or is he just afraid to run hard? What do you think?
Well, no, he should be able to get after it. He's here and back and should be fine getting after things. That's another thing I got to look at, because when the ball skipped away, I was watching Bowers running from second, knowing that he might be a little aggressive coming around. So I was kind of yelling for, you know, Seve to get in cover home, and I was watching the runner. So it's another play I got to be able to watch back.
Okay, two things. First of all, number one, Aaron Boone, you wuss. Really, you wuss. The guy dogged it, and your route was, I got to look at the replay. What are you, an NFL coach? You got to watch the film? You couldn't see it. The replay's on in the dugout. Everybody knew it. The broadcasters missed it initially, too, but they saw it, and you saw it, too. Don't kid yourself. Don't kid yourself. Because your PR guy told you on top of it, hey, Aaron, be aware they're going to ask you about Sanchez, because replay showed that he dogged it on two plays. Boone knew. He gave Sanchez a pass. Secondly, and more importantly, he said last night, no, the guy's here. He's not hurt. He should be ready to go. Murray, I'll just ask you quickly, if you see any comments that come out of Tampa from Boone about Sanchez and why he's on the DL.
Sure.
And did Sanchez not tell him that he was hurt, or some sort of nonsense like that? I would love to know what the explanation was today from Aaron Boone. Okay, but really, he looks weak. He looks weak, and Sanchez looks like a bum. He's hitting 181. Joe Girardi was on him a year ago because he was lazy on defense. Frankly, he's fat and out of shape. That's another thing. Sanchez has had a crap year, feels like he's got a bad attitude. The kid can hit, especially against David Price. But all of that aside, boy, it really does make you look at the Yankees and say, they feel less professional than the Red Sox do. And maybe some of that is a reflection on Alex Cora. We'll tell you what Cora said about one of his players who made some mistakes last night. We'll get to that next. And your calls, plus a very interesting story in the Boston Globe on the website by Alex Speer, who I believe has a very good understanding and instinct when it comes to the thinkings and strategies of Red Sox management and ownership. Very interesting story that we will get to next.
The Baseball Reporter's Tony Mazz, 98.5, The Sports Hub. This is the Baseball Reporter's.
Which makes all the sense in the world if you're the Red Sox.
With Tony Mazzarotti, 98.5, The Sports Hub.
Trying to keep it away from Betts, the 2-2. Floater to center field, charging on Jones. He'll make the catch. Tagging up Brock Holt. He's going to be in to score if he gets in there. Made the catch and the out there at second base. The run did not score on the double play. And so it remains a 5-2 game here in the middle of the fifth inning with Kimbrel coming on.
I don't know what Rafael Devers was thinking about on that fly ball to the outfield, because, you know, one thing you're supposed to do when you're at second base is check where the outfielders are playing. And Andrew Jones, Adam Jones, was not playing very deep at all. And you can see right here, Devers just taking off to third base, and he gets doubled up easy. Now, Brockholt tags up. He's not running hot. He didn't expect, you know, that to happen at second base. And even if he was running hot, they still had the double play before he would have reached the plate.
Yeah, he was turning around, looking behind him like, what happened there?
So that was last night in the Red Sox game late. A late occurrence in the Red Sox game in Baltimore against the Orioles. Obviously, the Red Sox went on to win the game 5-3. That one took place in the ninth inning. Base running mistake by Rafael Devers. And the reason I'm playing that for you is because Devers completely had his head up his butt. I mean, completely. He forgot how many outs there were. That's what I think it was. And so the mistake was so egregious that Dave O'Brien didn't even look over there. He thought, well, there's no way the runner's running from second. He saw the outfielder catch the ball. His eyes then went to Brock Holt scoring, and he was just calling the play normally as a sacrifice fly. Then he looked up and realized the inning was over, and because he was caught off guard. He said, you got to be kidding me. Double play? What the hell was Devers doing going? So they doubled him off. But the reason we're playing it for you, and we played earlier, Aaron Boone's reaction, rather, last night to Gary Sanchez, and Gary Sanchez's just complete laziness on the field, and Boone making up some cockamamie excuse that he wasn't looking at the plays and had to go look at the replays to really get a sense of what was going on. Okay? Here's what Cora said last night after the game, without seeing replays, about Rafael Devers.
Bad read. We'll address that. I mean, where we at and where we going, we can't play that way. It's not only the base running mistake, but we had to bring Craig in that situation. And those things, he doesn't have to manage the team, but he needs to understand that, you know, we had to play better baseball.
So I love the fact that Cora was head on, not good enough. And there was also a slight fielding glitch in the eighth inning in which on a leadoff batter, Devers sort of took his time. It was Tim Beckham, who runs well, hit kind of a bouncer to third that was a high bouncer, not your typical grounder. And it wasn't a chopper either, but the ball bounced to, you know, waist or chest height. Devers had to back up a little to get it and then sort of took his time releasing, making the throw, and Beckham beat it out for a single. Initially, they called him out. They reviewed it quickly and called him safe. The next pitch, Workman gave up a two-run home run, and now a 5-0 game is 5-2. Okay, so there was that too. Cora hit it head on. And I want to get to how this, I shouldn't say how this, but Devers is a guy that a lot of people think the Red Sox could move as part of a deal here at the deadline. I don't think they're going to move Devers. Okay, I don't. But if you want to argue for Alex Cora right now, and this, I guess this is my question to you as a Red Sox fan, how are you feeling about the manager right now? You should feel better about him than the Yankees fans do about Aaron Boone, because it feels to me like Cora is communicating with his players, is very open about it, is direct with them. Nothing's hidden. Nothing's cryptic. Everything is head on, and the Red Sox look like they're all pointed in the right direction. 617-779-0985. Brian's in his car. Brian, what do you got?
Hey, Tony. So, first off, does this not just scream John Farrell?
Oh, totally. Listen, Aaron Boone sounds totally like Farrell. I couldn't agree with you more, Brian. Cora sounds like an adult who's very direct and straightforward with his players. Go ahead.
All right. My second point is, why are we letting, I know it's against a horrible team, but why are we letting this this dumpster fire start, you know, get earning a spot in the rotation again, just coming back. The rotation has been fine without him. I think he would have to earn his spot back.
Okay, and you're talking about Drew Pomeranz, who's back in the rotation and tonight pitching against the Orioles. And why is he in there? And I think there's a very simple explanation. Why not? Stretch him out. Maybe he gets hot. Maybe he pitches like he did for much of last season, and then you can go with the hot guy in the postseason. See, unlike a lot of people, and again, I'm just giving you my two cents, I'd be eager to hear yours as a Red Sox fan. But unlike a lot of people, I'm not assuming that David Price gets game two. I think after game one, it's wide open. The one thing I can tell you in my mind with some level of certainty, and again, you tell me if you're thinking differently, but Rick Porcello will be in the rotation. Whether it's second or third, I don't know. The other two spots, I'm not conceding any one of them to Price. What if Pomeranz pitches better than Price down the stretch, and you're better off with Pomeranz in the rotation and Price in the bullpen? What if that happens? What if you aren't able to get Zach Britton or whoever else as the trade deadline here approaches and you need a power lefty in the bullpen? Who's your best bet at a power lefty? I feel better about David Price in the bullpen than I do in the rotation. And I'm not sure how you feel as a fan, but to me, I'd rather have Price in the bullpen in the playoffs because I think he's more of a known commodity there. Paulie's in Dedham. Paulie, what do you got?
Tony, can we have a stupid from you on the Devers base running blender last night?
Sure. STOOPID.
Tony, thank you, Tony. I wanted to go right to the screen and wrap my two hands around his neck. When Baltimore had retaken the momentum of the game, and that would have, and we still won the game. You know, they had a couple of guys on in the end of the game, but and we still won. But we could have wrestled that momentum back at that point and put them away.
Paulie, how dumb
can you be? I mean, how much is he getting paid? How long has he played the game?
Okay, forget about the salary. Okay, he's a kid. He's not making a lot of money. And you start saying that, you're not going to like any of them, for crying out loud. The other thing is, I think Paulie called the midday show. He always calls the midday show one show per day. That's sort of the general rule. But that aside, not only did... Forget the fact that he put the game in jeopardy. They were up 5-0. He cost him at least a run because Workman may have given up the home run anyway, but it would have been a solo homer. Okay, so he cost him a run there, and then he may have cost him another run on the bases, and as a result, they had to pitch Kimbrel in a game that they were leading 5-0. So you're trying to save bullets here. You don't want to needlessly use guys unless you have to. So Devers made a play, and I give Cora credit for addressing the matter head on. Mike's in a car. Mike, what do you got?
Yeah, Tony, you just made the biggest point I think that Cora hit was having to use Kimbrel. That's the biggest one. That was the biggest mistake. That was the biggest cause or rather result of the mistake was having to go to Kimbrel when you didn't have to. And that's what this kid has to understand. Cora said it great. I manage a team. He doesn't. But every one of those players has to understand the situation. I mean, for him to pull a Benintendi like that in a critical position of a game was a huge mistake, and he's got to learn from it.
Oh, listen, Mike, I forgot to ask you this, Murray. Is Devers in the lineup tonight?
I haven't seen yet. Hold on.
Okay, so not urgent. I mean, it's not a big deal. Just out of curiosity.
He is. He's batting eighth and playing third base.
Okay, so, you know, roll over, Murray. Play dead. Like, I know we're barking orders at you, and I'm sorry.
That's all good.
So the, Devers is still in the lineup. He's a kid. He's going to make mistakes. He's still 21 years old. He's always been a butcher in the field. Okay, so the defense, to me, is less of an issue. The base running is just downright stupid. That's just not paying attention. Okay, really, that's as simple as that, not paying attention. Now, look, do I think they're going to trade for a third baseman here? Nope, I don't. I think Devers is going to play. Do I think there's a chance they could trade Devers? Nope, I don't. I don't think they're going to take away from the big league roster. And I have said repeatedly here that I think the Red Sox have limitations at this trade deadline. They don't have a lot to trade, and they don't want to take money because it's going to put them over the $237 million luxury tax threshold that they clearly do not want to go over. Or do they? We'll get to Alex Spears' story in the Globe. Interesting thing that was published this afternoon. I'll explain why when we come back after Murray gets you caught up on headlines.
We have the Sox covered. The Baseball Reporters, 98.5, the Sports Hub. We have the Sox covered. This is the Baseball Reporter's Tony Mazzarotta show that Red Sox Nation turns to first. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
The Yankees may never get back from that.
It's just amazing to me that
that's not a small hole.
That the Yankees can't get over these terrible teams like Baltimore and the Rays. Like, it's just, you know, because they've done so well against, you know, the iron of the league, including the Red Sox and obviously Cleveland, Houston. But these teams, they just keep tripping all over themselves. And six games just feels steep at this point.
I mean, once you get to five or six, that's a pretty good size gap. And again, you know, now it's four on the loss column, so that one's a little tricky.
Sure.
Like if the Yankees rip off all those wins and the Red Sox don't play, well, then it's four games. And they're not dead. But if they lose some of those games and it's a legit six, they're in trouble. I mean, they're in danger of having the Red Sox run and hide right now. So if I were the Yankees, I'd be concerned with that. I mean, if I'm on the New York side of it. As to the Red Sox, and I want to get back to your calls here in 1 second. The trade deadline, I have been operating under the assumption up to now that the Red Sox don't want to go over the luxury tax threshold of $237 million. They're already in the luxury tax, okay? But by going over 237, they incur other penalties. They would pay a higher tax for one, but even that, so what? The Red Sox have plenty of money. But the other penalty that comes is that they would drop 10 spots in the draft. And I don't think the Red Sox want to do that, especially with a farm system that right now sucks. Okay, it sucks. I don't care what Dave Dombrowski says about it's better than people think. We have prospects down at A-ball. Whoop-dee-doo. Everybody has prospects at A-ball. Everybody. The question is, do they stay prospects beyond A-ball? So Alex Speer of the Globe wrote a story today, and I put stock in what Alex writes because I feel like he is very well connected to ownership and upper management of the Red Sox. Okay, Alex is a very fair guy. He's a very analytical guy. He doesn't get overly emotional about issues. And so he's a good guy to go to if you want to get your message out and have someone understand something in a dispassionate, completely logical manner. Okay, and also I would say he's that way as a human being, and it's one of his strengths. He's a good guy. So he wrote today with three, let me rephrase, okay, that the Red Sox pick in the draft could end up being as low as number 33 in the first round. And there were a number of variables for that, okay? But he writes, the top Red Sox pick in 2019 would likely fall somewhere between 28 and 33. A 10-pick penalty, which is what the Red Sox would get if they go over that 237 threshold, would push them down to the 38 to 43 range. So does everyone follow that? They'd go from the end of the first round, number 28 to 33, to number 38 to 43. Okay, somewhere in the range of 30 to 40. That's where the Red Sox would drop. And he has a quote from an executive that is a rival, allegedly, of the Red Sox. Okay, says one rival executive, that's not that big a deal. It's not like the difference between 8 and 18. Okay, so what this tells me is two things. One, the Red Sox are willing to take on money now. They are willing to go over that 237, and they are telling teams that in discussions. Okay, that's number one. And number two, it's a smart move by the Red Sox for this reason. And maybe they're forced into it. Teams don't want their talent. Okay, so if the Red Sox are going after a guy like Zach Britton, who has a $12 million salary this year, maybe originally they were saying to the Orioles, well, listen, we need you to pick up some of the money because we don't want to go over 237. And the Orioles say, well, that's fine, but we need you to give us some players from your system if that's the case. And the Red Sox say, okay, who do you want? And the Orioles say, nobody. You don't have players. So we can't deal. So the Red Sox have come to the realization, I think, that they have very little to offer in the way of talent to outbid other teams. So what do they have to do? They have to take on money. And then maybe there's a package or a deal that they can make with a team. So remember, three relievers have been dealt. Kelvin Herrera went from the Royals to the Nationals. Brad Hand went from the Padres to the Indians. And now Jurys Familia went from the Mets to the Oakland A's. The Red Sox have acquired none of them. So maybe now they're starting to realize we're going to have to go over 237 if we want to add a player, because nobody wants our minor league talent. That's what I think is going on. Joe is in a car. Joe, quickly, what do you got?
Yeah, I feel like you in 2013, Maz, because I have zero faith in this Sox team. I think Kimbrel's stats are as overblown as Rondo's assist streak back in the day, because the dude doesn't want to come in with anyone on base. He doesn't want to come in unless it's a save situation. He doesn't want to come in for more than three outs. I don't have any trust in him whatsoever, and Sale is the only pitcher I do trust, but he's going to break down, and it's not even really his fault, but it's like, there's not much they can do. I mean, the guy's just a frail 6'8".
Okay, so Joe, listen, if Sale breaks down, then they're cooked. And on Kimbrel, they have brought him into some spots this year where he's pitched a little bit better. But if your point overall is they don't have enough reliable pitchers at the moment, I think that's a fair point. Bills and Whitman, go ahead, Bill. What do you got?
Yeah, Tony, a lot of people just got to pump the brakes here about the divisional. I know a lot of people are getting carried away. Listen, I know there's six games up right now, but they were 17-2, and the Yankees were 9-9 back in April. 19 games later, the Yankees went 17-2, and the Red Sox went 9-9, and that 7.5-game lead was wiped out. So
Bill, listen, Bill, that's a fair point. The obvious difference now is that there are only 60 games to go, and I know that it can turn fast. And I personally don't think it's quite over yet. Ask me again after the 4-game series next weekend. If this thing gets to 7 or 8. And then the Red Sox take 3 out of 4 and it gets to 9 or 10, it's over. The Yankees aren't going to make up 10 games on this Red Sox team in 2 months. They're not going to do it. It's just not enough time. The Red Sox are too good. Okay, they're too good. It's Trivia Tuesday here on the Baseball Reporters. You know what that means. So we're going to clear the board and I will tell you. And listen closely. The first 5 callers to 617-779-0985. The call line. Okay, the show line. 617-779-0985. You will have the chance to participate in Trivia Tuesday. If you can answer 3 questions correctly, you will get a $100 gift card for Seasons 52 Wine Bar and Grill, and you will be automatically entered for an overnight trip to see Boston play in New York in September. 2 game tickets, 2 train tickets, an overnight stay in a hotel in New York. You'll have a good time down there. It's a good get. Again, 617-779-0985. First 5 callers. Now you get a chance. Trivia Tuesday is next.
The Baseball Reporters with Tony Maz, 98.5, the Sports Hub. The show that Red Sox Nation turns to first. The Baseball Reporters, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
It's Trivia Tuesday on the Baseball Reporter. This is where your baseball knowledge can lead to fabulous prizes. And now, here's your host, Tony Mazzarotti.
Okay, we're going to get right to it. You guys all know the drill. You know the drill. You're going to answer 3 questions in a row. If you get them all right, you win a $100 gift card to Seasons 52 Wine Bar and Grill. That's number 1. And number 2, you are entered in a drawing to win 2 tickets to see Boston play New York in September in New York with round-trip train tickets and a hotel stay. Okay, so it's a pretty good get. Fun little game. Gives us something to do on a Tuesday at 10 minutes of 7.
We need sucky people this week, Maz.
Yeah, last week we had a guy who just rocked. First caller. Got 3 questions right, and that was it. It was over. The rest of you, go pound sand. You had no chance. That guy was dynamite.
We need the usual rockheads.
So this week we bring in Mark from Danvers is first. Mark, you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, Mark, here you go. Today is the anniversary of this.
Veritek and A-Rod going at it. Schilling is right in the middle of it. Now another fight off to the side. And it was Sturts. That's who Millar and Nixon got into it with. Today's starting pitcher.
Sturts is bleeding from the left ear. Veritek, I mean, you're trained to protect your pitcher. But Veritek appeared to have said something to Rodriguez. Rodriguez appeared to have said something to Veritek.
Okay, so there you go, Mark. You know what that is, right?
Yes.
Okay, that's the famous fight between Jason Veritek and Alex Rodriguez, which took place 14 years ago today. Who was the pitcher that hit Alex Rodriguez with a pitch starting the entire incident? Who hit him?
Was it Lowe?
Oh, it was not Derek Lowe. Incorrect. See, I thought that was an easy question.
It is an easy question.
Okay, I thought that was an easy question. So we'll go to question number 2 here. Okay, Brett and Lynn. Brett, you there?
Yep. How you doing?
Okay. So I'm good. So here you go. Here's your first question. Last week we asked a couple of All-Star game questions, but we didn't get to many of them because, frankly, the guy was so good that we never got to ask a lot of them. So here you go. Who is the only Red Sox player ever to win the Home Run Derby?
David Ortiz.
David Ortiz is correct. Good job. Very good. There you go. Number one. You got one right, Brett. Is it Brett? Is that the guy's name? Yeah, it's Brett. Okay, good job. Sorry. Here you go. Second question. In the Veritek A-Rod game, we just played a cut for you right there. Who hit the home run? Which switch-hitting Red Sox player hit the walk-off homer in the bottom of the 10th inning against Mariano Rivera to win the game? Do you know who that was?
Bill Miller?
Bill Miller is correct. Very good. Good job. Nice work. Okay, you got two right. You get the third one here, and then we're on to something. I'm going to make this one a little more difficult for you.
Yeah. All right.
In 1976, the Red Sox made a trade with the Oakland A's and essentially bought these two players from Oakland, an accomplished outfielder and a future Hall of Fame reliever, before Commissioner Bowie Kuhn reversed the trade and sent the players back to Oakland. These guys actually put on Red Sox uniforms for a night. Who were they?
I have no clue.
Okay. I know it's a toughie. I got to let you go, Brett. Got to let you go. It's a tough one. Murray, I'm guessing you don't know that one either, right?
No, but I really want to take a stab at it, though.
Okay, no, don't take a stab.
Boo.
Sit there. Alex is in Cumberland. Alex, you there?
Yep, I'm here.
Okay, here you go.
All right.
Another All-Star game question. In 1993, this skilled left-handed hitter was so afraid of batting against Randy Johnson that he put his helmet on backwards and actually got into the right-handed batter's box. Who was he?
Ken Griffey Jr.
Incorrect. Ken Griffey Jr. is incorrect.
Come on. It's like one of the most famous clips of the last like 25, 30 years in baseball.
I don't know if I would have described Ken Griffey as skilled. I mean, he was certainly skilled, but I would have said this guy's arguably like the greatest player of all time. I'd have given you a better hint, an easier hint. Jay's in Marblehead. Jay, you there?
I am here.
Okay. Another All-Star game question for you. In 1946, and it was a long time ago, but listen, this future Hall of Famer homered against Rip Sewell on the right-hander's famous Ephus pitch. So first, and this is not part of the question, do you know what an Ephus pitch is?
I do.
Okay. Who is the hitter who homered on the blooper or on the Ephus pitch?
1946. I'm just going to take a stab because I don't... It's Ted Williams.
Bingo! Attaboy! Good job! There you go. Ted Williams is correct. Excellent.
All right.
Okay, we're going to stick on more... we're going to stick on more All-Star game questions. Well, no, I know, but
make it at least when I was born.
Okay, how old are you?
58.
58?
Don't kowtow to him, Demaz. You ask the questions you want.
Okay, here you go. Second question. In 1993 and 94, this Red Sox third baseman averaged 11 home runs, 58 RBI, while batting 280. Incredibly, he was chosen to the All-Star game both years. Who was he?
1993. Gosh.
5 seconds.
5, 4.
I mean, that one shouldn't be that tough for a guy his age. He should have known that.
And of course, Rip Sewell got the name Rip for his well-known gastrointestinal problems thanks to his love of baked beans.
The guy was a very average third baseman. He went to 2 straight All-Star games, which should tell you how bad the Red Sox sucked in those years.
Of course, that would have to be Tim Nehring.
We're talking about like Brock Holt kind of selection of the All-Star team. Sam is in Hull. Sam, are you there?
Yep.
Okay, again. This is an easy one. Between 1939 and 1983, these two Red Sox players combined for 35 appearances in the All-Star game. I'll give you the dates again. Between 1939 and 1983, these two players combined for 35 appearances in the All-Star game. Who were they?
Kyle Yastrzemski and Ted Williams.
Bingo. Good job. Not so hard. Right? Attaboy. Okay, next question. At the trading deadline in 2004, the Red Sox shocked much of the baseball world by trading Nomar Garciaparra. Who were the two players the Red Sox got back for Garciaparra on the big league roster?
Doug Minkiewicz and Mike Myers.
Incorrect. Incorrect. He was close. I'm not going to tell you which one he got right, but it should be obvious, right? Should be obvious. No winners this week, Jimmy Stewart.
That's what I like. It's more entertaining this
week. No, I agree. It's way better. Yes, we got instead of the guy last week who just kicked ass. I mean, that guy must have 1,600 on his SATs when he
technically
took
a caller did answer three of your questions correctly. They just weren't trivia questions.
No, but I told him up front that one did not count. I said this is not part of the question, but I just asked.
Do you know the answer to this question? Yes, that's the correct answer.
Okay, EFIS. I just wanted to make sure he knew what an EFIS pitch was. But nonetheless, I like it much better when we get morons. It's just way more entertaining. I agree, Murray.
The Baseball Reporters on 88.5 The Sports Hub.